I'm Christopher Lloyd, and this is The Connection.
I'm hip. I'm no square. I'm alert. I'm awake. I'm aware. I am always on the scene, making the rounds, digging the sounds. I buy People magazine, cause I'm hip. Like Dig, I'm in step. When it was hip to be hip, I was hip. I don't blow, but I'm a fan. Look at me swing, ring-a-ding-ding. I even call my girlfriend man, cause I'm hip.
In the world of the Great American Songbook, the company that is of Irving Berlin, Jerome Kern, the Gershwins, Rodgers and Hart, Cole Porter, and those guys, our guest Dave Pritchford may just be the only giant who is still adding to the treasury of songs that we're all supposed to know and that the best singers choose to sing. We're listening to Dave Pritchford's send-up of super cool folk who want you to know just how hip they are. Mel Torme and Blossom Dearie have sung it too, but none as well as Dave Pritchford himself. Dave Pritchford makes every kind of connection with singer-pianists as different as Fats Waller and Nat King Cole. Also with the most admired of lyrics writers like Yip Harburg and Johnny Mercer. Connections also with jazz players like Vic Spiderbeck, whom he sings about, and Zoot Sims, with whom he played. Dave Pritchford's songs make connections, but they're also different from anything else. The whimsy is often recognizable in the titles like Peel Me a Grape, which became sort of Blossom Dearie's theme song, and My Attorney Bernie, or the classic list of the great names from mid-century baseball like Eddie Waitkus and Roy Campanella, the song Van Lingo Mungo. Connection listeners, we're sitting at the high pop intersection where Tin Pan Alley meets the art song, where lyrics meet melody, where tradition meets the 21st century. Who's got a song cue or a request? Do you have any idea how the making of these songs is done? Make the Dave Pritchford connection at 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. And welcome, Dave Pritchford.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
You're the man I want to be when I grow up.
I hope
just
it never happens.
You know, people joke about where these songs come from. Lyrics first, melody first. Sammy Kahn said it starts with a phone call.
Yeah.
How do you work?
Well, I start with the title, usually. That's what happens first for me. I try to make it work from that way. In the first place, I don't write hardly anything unless someone is standing behind me with a whip telling me to do it.
Sinatra's in the studio and you get 10 minutes.
Well, no, but, you know, I've got to give myself imaginary deadlines and crises in order to get the songs written. And usually it helps if someone tells me what they want a song about. And then I think of a title. And then I try to design the song around that title. That seems to be the most helpful way for me to start.
Does that mean you had a lawyer named Bernie?
No, a friend of mine was celebrating his 25th anniversary with the Minneapolis law firm, you know, and he invited me to come and entertain at this big party. And I thought that a nice house gift might be to write a song about attorneys. That's really the what motivated me to start writing the song. And I think I started with the title, My Attorney Bernie. I just thought it was kind of funny.
But you just play it. I have a friend named Bernie. We joke about it all the time. Let's just listen to My Attorney Bernie by Dave Pritchford.
Attorney Bernie, I'm impressed with his influential friends. He's got very big connections and I follow his directions. Bernie knows his way around and so I always do what Bernie recommends. I am blessed with my attorney Bernie. I'm impressed with the way he runs the store. He's got Dodger season boxes and an office full of boxes. It's amazing all the different things your average guy might need a lawyer for. Bernie tells me what to do. Bernie lays it on the line. Bernie says we sue, we sue. Bernie says we sign, we sign.
Should we sue or sign, Bernie?
Can I tell you a story about this? This
Please.
Song is... I played in England, in London, a couple of years ago. 3 or 4 years ago this happened. I came in to work the first night, and a lot of people were there. And they came up to me, several people came up to me, and they said, it was so touching. This is London, you know, and I had just got to town. It was so touching to hear your song at Bernie's funeral. And I said, well, who? Bernie who? Well, and they said, well, Bernie, I think the guy's name is Bernie Simon. I don't remember, but let's just say it was Bernie Simon's funeral. I said, well, who's Bernie Simon? Who's Bernie Simon? He's the biggest entertainment lawyer in all of England. I said, well, I didn't even know he was sick. You know, I had no idea. Well, and of course, it was everyone was there at the funeral. And when they played your song, there wasn't a dry eye. I said, there was, you played that song at the funeral? I said, have you ever listened to the words? Well, of course, Bernie instructed us that it was to be played at his funeral. He said it was written for him.
That's a riot. What did the Brits make of the baseball obsession?
They couldn't get with that. No, it stopped there. But they went for the attorney song.
Would you just leap in right there? What about your own baseball thing?
You know, when I was a kid growing up in St. Paul, I was a baseball fan. I'm talking 13, 14 years old. I was a baseball fan, but it was minor league ball, St. Paul Saints. And that's the kind of baseball fan I am. I like to remember about it. I like to read books about the history of the game. I don't even remember who was in last year's World Series. I haven't paid much attention to current baseball for decades.
We've just got a sample of this famous song, Van Lingle Mungo. This is to me, I mean, we should all be silent through the whole... duration of this, which we can't be, but as somebody said, this is built around not the greatest baseball players that ever lived, but the greatest names that ever played baseball. The song is Van Lingle Mungo. Let's just listen.
Feeny Majesty, Johnny G, Eddie Juiced, Johnny Pesky, Thornton Lee, Danny Gardella, Van Lingle Mungo, Whitey Karowski, Max Lanier, Eddie Waitkus, and Johnny Vandermeer. Bob Estalella, Van Lingle Mungo, Augie Bergamo, Sigmund Jacoki, Big Johnny Mize, and Barney McCoskey, Hal Trosky, Augie Galan, and Pinky Maid, and Frenchy Bordagaray, Phil Cabaretta, George McQuinn, Howard Pollett, and Early Wynn, Roy Campanella.
It's the Roy Campanella moment that gives me the biggest goosebumps. It's a beautiful, beautiful song.
Yeah, I like it too. It's an oddball song.
And this is before Daryl Strawberry.
Oh, my gosh, yes, this was 1968 or something when I wrote this.
I know, but I just think, what is it about baseball that collects these names? I remember John Updike saying, you know, if he had made a baseball player and named him Daryl Strawberry, nobody would believe it.
I wasn't thinking of how picturesque the names were, except in the case of Mungo himself. I always thought that was a very musical name, Van Lingle Mungo. And he was always referred to that in the sports pages. Never just, very seldom as just Van Mungo. They usually put the middle name in, too. Van Lingle Mungo. Mm. So I had written this kind of a sinuous Brazilian melody, and I had fit a couple sets of lyrics to it that had nothing to do with baseball. And they didn't make it. And then I was thumbing through the baseball encyclopedia, which had just been published, that great big thick book, and I came upon that name, you know, in there, and hey, that's it, Van Lingle Mungo. It fit right into my little melodic fragment, so I continued building the song around names of ball players that played when he did.
I see a guy, you know, with a writing, continuously adding names to the back of an envelope as you did that song.
I got him out of the encyclopedia. I was thinking of players with certain amount of syllables in their name. I would like, you know, Whitey Karoski. I had to have names that had that fell on certain accents in the melody.
And you hadn't heard of Karl Yastrzemski in those days. Ted Klazuski.
No, I didn't have him in there, but I had Eddie Basinski. I had certain metric considerations to honor, you know. I couldn't just put in stars or ballplayers I liked. They had to rhyme or scan. It's not easy to get into that song.
I know it isn't.
In fact, I'm sorry to step on your favorite moment, but I excised Campanella out of that song. I took him out. After I made this record that we just heard, I was upset by including Campanella in.
Why?
Because don't
Campanile.
You see?
I mean, it's such a beautiful
sound. Sure, it's beautiful, but what I was trying to invoke was that period before Robinson and Campanella, before they had black ball players in Major League. All the other players are from that pre-integrated era. You see what I mean? Campanella's name stuck out like a sore
thumb.
That's
another reason I like it.
Yeah, right. So I replaced his name for historical reasons with Art Passarella. And that confounded a lot of listeners who'd never heard of Art Passarella. But that's their problem, not mine.
Right? I think there should be a continuing, you know, like, you know, people never stop adding, you know, writing lyrics for Let's Do It or You're the Top. I mean, they're
right.
You ought to have continuous new versions. Maybe people ought to come out of the audience.
Well, it's like that Talkin' Baseball song, you know, Terry Cashman's song, Talkin' Baseball.
Yes.
He wrote, I think, a version for with the Hall of Fame, so to speak, for every major league team, you know. But, you know, my song, how can you update a song that's about nostalgia?
That's a question. We played three Dave Frischberg songs, but Dave Frischberg plays other people's songs too, and I just wanted to sort of broaden the question because Connection listeners will want to get in on it. Who are your other favorites? I'd love you to sort of rewrite the Alec Wilder book on American songs, the rankings. He ended up saying, Jerome Kern said you can't speak of Irving Berlin's place in American music. He is American music, and I think Alec Wilder put Irving Berlin at the top of the top, but I'd love to know your rankings of sort of the great American songwriters.
I can't rank them. Give me a break. I can't rank them, but I would put certainly Berlin at or near the top, absolutely. And but, you know, for personally speaking, I admire all those great names that you mentioned. But personally speaking, it was Frank Lesser that really appealed to me when I was first starting to write songs. I just was knocked out by Frank Lesser's
Mr. Guys and Dolls, among other things.
Little Guys and Dolls and How to Succeed and Most Happy Fella and Green Willow and all. Every show he wrote had its own special little flavor to it. You never would confuse that could be from this show or that could be from another. Every Frank Lesser song, you knew exactly what show it came from, and you actually knew the character who was singing it. He was such a... To me, he was the great genius of his, the songwriting genius of his generation.
Hmm. And did the words and the music?
He did, although he started out as a lyric writer, and he became very well known as a professional lyric writer. Wrote a lot of Hollywood songs and so forth with big composers like Harold Arlen and Hoagy Carmichael. But all the time, there was this musician lurking under him, and when he began to write, watch out, he was great, great writer.
Let's just listen to a little bit of your favorite Frank Lesser.
I see the cool, clear eyes of a seeker of wisdom and truth. Yet there's that upturned chin and the grin of impetuous youth. I believe in you. I believe in you. I hear the sound of good, solid judgment whenever you talk. Yet there's that brave
bold. Spring of the tiger that quickens your walk. I believe in you. I believe in you.
From what character and what song? I mean, what show?
That's for How to Succeed, and that's a guy singing to himself in the mirror while he's shaving.
Talk about some of the others among the writers that you like.
Among the writers, oh, well, of course, Mercer and Lerner and Lowe, and, of course, all the classic songwriters. I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy. I like the structure and the harmonic ethic of the classic pop song, you know.
Jerome Kern would be at the top of my little heap. What about Duke Ellington?
Well, Duke Ellington, of course, is an influence on me in more than just songwriting. I mean, Duke influenced me a whole lot just by being immersed in his music. It happened to me when I got to New York, and I was already playing piano professionally by the time someone actually turned me on to Duke Ellington. I, of course, had heard the band. Who hadn't? But he turned me on to start listening analytically to Duke, and before I knew it, I was hip deep in Duke's music. I listened to nothing else for 2 or 3 years. In fact, that was the time when I was playing with Ben Webster in New York in Ben Webster's quartet, and Ben was really impressed that I knew a lot of the older arcane Ellington material. And Ben himself was kind of he was an admirer of the old time Duke.
You know, the funny thing about the Duke songs is simply that the lyric writing is so uneven. There are great songs for which there are no lyrics, like, at least I don't know the lyrics of Lotus Blossom, for example.
Yeah, well.
And then there are others that are completely brilliant, like Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me.
But, you know, Duke didn't write a whole lot of those lyrics himself.
Oh, I don't suppose he wrote any of them.
He did write some of them, yeah. I think he wrote certain lyrics like Tulip or Turnip or similar songs to that. I think he had a hand in writing. But most of them were written by professional lyric writers. And, you know, I some of them are just classic, even though you wouldn't call them great poetry, like Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me and stuff like that. These are such classic little pieces of conversation. It's silly to try to compare them with lyric writers like Alan J. Lerner or Johnny Mercer. It's a different world. They worked beautifully for Duke songs.
Which are your favorites among those lyrics? Prelude to a Kiss has some beautiful lines in it. Don't Get Around Much Anymore. It's a beautiful idea, actually, for a song lyric.
Oh, I don't have a favorite lyric when it comes to Duke's music. I just like the sound of what... Of course, he's one of my favorite piano players. And I always love to hear him play the piano, especially his own stuff.
This is in the background, Dave Frischberg playing Duke Ellington.
Yeah.
This is the Strayhorn tune, Just Sitting in a Rock in It.
Is Strayhorn, is he responsible for that one?
Yeah, he is. I'm sure he is.
Well, the relationship between those two is really fascinating, and it always seemed to me that Billy Strayhorn might have been Duke Ellington's big inspiration. You know what I mean? As Duke passed into a certain period of his life, I think he began to really worship Strayhorn, and I think they learned from each other. As much as Duke was the mentor, I think Strayhorn was also a mentor in many ways.
Well, Duke said himself that he didn't know where he left off
and Strayhorn
began.
Wow, it's just amazing, those two minds working together.
And add the mind of Dave Frischberg, and you really got something.
Well, you got me playing their music, right?
Dave Frischberg is our guest. Phone 1-800-423-8255. Pianist, songwriter, performer, sort of catalog of the American Songbook. Give him a call at 1-800-423-TALK. John is on the line. Hello, John. Welcome.
Hi, is that me?
That's you.
Oh, hi. Dave, Chris, you know, wonderful show. Dave,
yeah.
You are in my book of some of the, just one of the greatest songwriters. And well, I love that tradition of the quirky jazz singer, Blossom Dearie, Bob Dureau, Mose Allison. To me, you know, you seem to fit in that niche. But the thing I like about you is just the songs you write out, just exquisite examples of the songwriter's craft. I think one of my favorites is Peel Me a Grape.
Well, you know, I think that's like a piece of material for a female, and I've never bothered to learn it. I suppose I could sing it because
well,
I know
what
it
I like
well enough.
But it's just a perfect picture of the female who believes her youth and sexuality can get her anything.
Wow.
It's the perfect picture.
Is that what it is? I'll tell you who I wrote it for. This is 1962 or something I'm talking about. I was playing for excuse me, for Dick Hames and Fran Jeffries. I was conducting for them on the road. Remember them?
Yes, I do.
Fran Jeffries was a terrific singer. She came up to me one night. She said, "Can you write something cute and sexy for me to use as a kind of a feature number on our act?" So, hey, here's my song, my chance. I went home and I wrote Peel Me a Grape, especially for that purpose.
French Me a Fry.
Yeah, that's the first song I ever wrote, John.
Really?
Yeah, that I showed to anybody. And,
what a job.
And I don't think Fran even looked at it.
we don't have it queued up. Sing us, remind us of the lyrics of...
Well, you know, Peel Me a Grape and French Me a Fry, and little cute little phrases like that, sung in a kind of a seductive way.
Sing it.
Blossom.
Go
I will not sing it, Chris. How can I sing Peel Me a Grape? All right. Me singing Peel Me a Grape? Peel Me a Grape? I don't even know how to go. I don't even know. I'm stumped for the next lyric.
Remind him, John.
Oh, well,
anyway,
I haven't committed the lyrics to memory, but which is not to say I don't, you know, really enjoy it, but it's definitely one of my favorites.
Well, Diana Krall made this huge hit record of it recently, and it's resurged into our consciousness now. And Banana Republic even used it for their one of their national ad campaigns.
Now we're talking. Anybody want to sing Peel Me a Grape, just dial 1-800-423-8255. Lynn is on the line. Hello, Lynn.
Hello there.
Welcome.
Hi, let me just get off the headset here because it's a little goofy. There we go.
Yes. This is Lynn without the headset. Okay.
Hi. Hello?
Hello. Yeah, yeah.
Hi. It's just such a delight. I am not worthy. The last time I think I saw you with my dad, who passed away recently and was a Giant fan, was on Ventura Boulevard in some little club that was on the second floor. I don't know, in Sherman Oaks or something.
Le Cafe.
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't know if it still exists anymore. But the two quick one big question. At that time, there was some rumor that you were going to do a Broadway show, and I thought, wow, this how rich would that be? And I just wondered what happened to that. And my other just a comment to everyone is, please, although we love and your wonderful lyrics, please, no one disregard how Dave can make a keyboard sting. I mean, your voicings and your chordings are just wonderful. And
oh.
I wondered, in terms of Broadway, harking back to what Chris said about Noel Coward, if he was one of your influences too, and we'd love to see a Broadway show, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Lynn, thank you.
You know, I have been involved in creating a couple. I won't call them Broadway. I'll call them theatrical pieces. You know, I don't think about Broadway. Broadway, to me, represents the Phantom of the Opera and things of that nature. Maybe off Broadway or in a review situation or something like that. I did have a review produced at the Milwaukee Rep Theater that ran for a few weeks, but never bothered to get that mounted again. It wasn't really that stage worthy, but the songs worked very well on stage. I also wrote a bunch of songs for a baseball-connected show about 15 years ago, and out of that came a lot of the songs that I subsequently recorded. But that show, due to a lame script, was never really produced.
What about the Noel Coward connection? The line was that if Noel Coward had been born Jewish in St. Paul, Minnesota, and knew everything about baseball, he would have been Dave Fishberg.
Well, I don't. Is that good or bad? I don't know what to say about that. I don't think there's much of a connection between me and him at all. He's a terrific songwriter, one of the best songwriters there is. And I'm talking about as a melodist as well as the other part. Yeah, he's a great wit. And I love his delivery, too, that wonderful delivery. I got that album at home of him in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, we played it on his 100th birthday not that long ago.
But I'll tell you who was a huge influence on me in that same bag, and that was Gilbert and Sullivan. They really charmed me as a child, and my house in St. Paul was filled with their music, especially the Mikado. That was our favorite thing. I was able to sing the Mikado and practically knew the whole operetta by heart as a kid. I'm talking about 8-year-old, you know. So, I mean, that to me is still the
parents of 8-year-olds, go ahead and put on the Mikado right now. Dave Fishberg is our guest, child of Gilbert and Sullivan, Rodgers and Hart, the Gershwins, the whole tradition of singing and performing at the piano. Give them a call at 1-800-423-8255. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI Public Radio International. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. From Boston University, this is WB.
Whew, you sure gotta climb a lot of steps to get to this Capitol building here in Washington. Well, I wonder who that little scrap of paper is.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol City. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
Hey, Bill, you certainly have a lot of patience.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. That's Dave Fishberg's song, I'm Just a Bill, from the Schoolhouse Rock TV series. It's the way an awful lot of 20-somethings and 30-somethings learn their civics. The phone's 1-800-423-8255 to make the Dave Fishberg connection. That's the Dave Fishberg of a lot of folk younger than me.
That's Jack Sheldon singing, you know. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. Now
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, that's Jack Sheldon's vocal. Bob Doro and I, I wrote that one, and Bob was the musical director of Schoolhouse Rock. There was a period in which we just wrote everything for Jack Sheldon because we loved the way he delivered our material. Bob wrote his famous Conjunction Junction for Jack Sheldon to sing too, and we recorded it at the same momentous recording session at which I'm Just a Bill was recorded. Well, you laugh, but these are the two flagship songs of Schoolhouse Rock. And while you laugh, I can go to the mall and pick up a cap that's got a little I'm Just a Bill on it and a T-shirt that says I'm Just a Bill. So this is merchandising gold here.
Go for it. You, just before the break, you were talking about the imprint of Gilbert and Sullivan on your 8-year-old brain. You gave the world I'm Just a Bill. What are kids listening to now?
I have no idea what they're listening to.
What would you want them to be listening to?
I turned off the radio in 1958.
Don't say that.
I did. I said they're on. Well, I turned on public radio. That's all I listened to.
Well, that's radio too, man.
Well, I don't know what the kids are listening to. I can't imagine. I really can't imagine.
See, I don't want you to say it because I don't want to think of you as an old fogey, mainly because I don't want to think of myself as an old fogey for preferring those songs. But I do.
Yeah. What songs?
Those pre-rock songs. I hate to say it.
You mean the old classic way
of
writing songs?
Real songs.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess those will always probably live, but I'm interested to see what else is going to live. I'm wondering how much of today's music is going to live.
What would you put your nickel on?
I'd say that, I'll tell you what, this is kind of a grim little forecast, but I would say that with the Internet, the door is being thrown open to countless idiots and morons who will produce our next chunk of music, I
think. No question people produce them, but will anybody listen is the question. I mean, I think you can make the other argument that the Internet will give people a way past the market manipulators.
And, you think so?
Well, yeah.
We'll find out. I'm not sure it's going to have a salutary, is that the correct word, effect on music. It's going to have a huge effect on the distribution and broadcasting and dissemination of music. It's going to have a cataclysmic effect on the accounting side of music. Like, how are songwriters going to get paid? That's an interesting proposition.
Yeah, but if they don't, if listeners can go shop for themselves, past the record companies and the advertising budgets and whatnot, that could free the way to a lot of good stuff, I would think.
Well, I'd say that might be a good idea if there were four things to choose from. But if you have 4 million things to choose from, I don't think anything but disorganized chaos will ever come from that.
What's your theory? I mean, again, this is hard to talk about without sounding old fogeyish, but what's your theory about what happened to the song, the American song?
Well, I think what happened was pretty much part of a process that took place when television arrived and drove network radio out of business, and local radio stations began to wield the power over the airwaves all across the United States. And it soon became evident to them that they would be doing better off if they didn't have to pay ASCAP for Richard Rodgers and George Gershwin and Cole Porter. Somebody had the bright idea, we can play the music we want to play, and we can own it, too. And from that moment on, right around when the BMI thing was first started, I think that's when the character of music began to change. And when radio became the chief broadcaster, the chief disseminator of music, they were calling the shots. I think music sounds the way it does today because that's the way radio designed it.
1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, our guest is Dave Frischberg, the Van Lingle Mungo Man, the I'm Hip Man. 1-800-423-TALK. He's a songwriter and a student of songwriting. LJ from Burlington, Vermont is on the line.
Hello?
LJ, welcome.
Hello. Listen, I do a radio show at the University of Vermont radio station for the last 10 years, and the name of the program is called LJ's Dream. And I was wondering if I should pay royalties to your guest today.
Well, are you the same LJ that used to work at the Gordian Knot?
Yes.
My God. That's
we haven't talked since about 1966, 1967.
I used to be like, I was the band leader there for a
That's
while.
Right.
I was also a sideman there, and it was a jumping nightclub in New York. And
on the Upper East Side.
Upper East Side, and I had a great band once with Donald McDonald and Carmen Leggio, and oh, yeah, that was fun. Well, I remember exactly who you are. In fact, that's...
Glad you listened to The Connection, LJ.
Pardon?
I'm flattered that you listened to The Connection.
Listen, I'm a religious, it's almost a religious experience. I try to tune in as much as I can, and when I found out who your guest was, I wheeled into a building to get to a public phone.
Well, you're still on your toes, I can see that.
I really have not had the opportunity to talk to this gentleman for, like I say, I think probably the last time we talked was about 1965, 66.
Yeah, so what's
and
new?
Really fond memories of him. His warped sense of humor has not changed. We used to have some very, very interesting conversations about life and music.
I'm glad to hear from you, LJ. As far as you're owing me royalties for the use of the name, my attorney will be in touch with you.
His name is what? Herman?
Exactly. My attorney, Herman.
Well, listen, is there a way I can get in touch with you?
Well, I suppose, but I don't want to...
Are you still out of the West Coast?
I live in Portland.
Portland. All right. I'll find a way to get to you.
Okay, good.
You can hear him tonight at the Regatta Bar in Cambridge. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Dave Frischberg connection. Bernie is on the line. Bernie?
This is amazing. Dave Frischberg. And of course,
your lawyer's meter is running, I'm sure.
And of course, Chris Lydon is the best. He refutes the dumbing down of radio. The only thing I wanted to ask you about was the ultimate road song is Sweet Kentucky Ham for me.
Right. I like that. Yeah, it is an ultimate. I don't know if it's the ultimate, but it is definitely a road song. What would you like me to say about it, if anything?
We've got it queued up, Bernie. Give us the intro.
I got Sweet Kentucky Ham on my mind, on my mind. Rosie Clooney.
Yeah, uh-huh.
How did that happen with the song and with Rosie Clooney? Is there anything...
Well, no, the song was written long before Rosemary Clooney recorded it. The song was written, I think, back in the early 80s. I was on the road at the time when I wrote it, and there were no restaurants open. And I was very much in love at the time, and I remember writing that. And, trying to write a love song has been difficult for me. I try to write them at arm's length and try to put some kind of a neutral metaphor in between me and the actual love. So in this case, I was able to use trying to find a restaurant as my little love lever. But the subtext of the song is as you perceive it. Exactly. I miss my girlfriend.
Bernie, let's listen to Sweet Kentucky Ham.
It's 6 p.m. Supper time in South Bend, Indiana. And you figure, what the hell, you can eat in your motel. So you order up room service on the phone. You watch the local news and dine alone. You got to take what little pleasures you can find. When you got sweet Kentucky ham on your mind, nothing but sweet Kentucky ham on your mind. It's 10 p.m., they're rolling up the sidewalks in Milwaukee. The only place to eat is just across the street. So you sit there with a bowl of navy bean, and you turn the pages of your magazine, and you feel you want to quit while you're behind, 'cause you've got sweet Kentucky ham on your mind, nothing but sweet Kentucky ham on your mind.
You could never teach me to sing like that, but what about playing the piano? You taught yourself.
Well, so to speak, I did, yeah. I did study piano. I shouldn't say I studied it. I took piano lessons when I was a child of 8 or 9. Despised the whole experience. I thought it was awful. I was able to get along at the piano without that. And when I learned quickly how to play the simple classical pieces of Schumann and stuff like that. But I would like, after I learned them so easy, I would bring them to my teacher and I'd play them in different rhythms. I remember I brought her one thing by Mozart. I had it like in a tango rhythm or a conga. It was a conga rhythm. I was just a kid. I was entranced with the dance rhythms. And she really laid the law. No, you can't do that. You're not supposed to do that. Oh, that's terrible. Boy, I remember that moment thinking, if music's not supposed to be fun, let me out. Take me out, coach. I didn't get back to the piano till I was in high school and got back on my own trying to play bebop.
Hmm. Do you teach?
No.
Interesting. Did you have kids to inflict piano lessons on?
Yes. My kids and I are on an awkward during a period right now in my divorced life. So the less I discuss them, the better.
Okay. 1-800-423-8255. With the songwriter and singer, Dave Frischberg. Rich is on the line.
Good morning, David.
Yeah.
A couple of things. I was going to say that I've been listening to you for a long time. Two of my favorite songs of yours seem to have a kind of connection. One is The Sports Page, and the other is Blizzard of Lies. And I don't know why. I guess, I don't know if if Chris were familiar with it, sports page is all about the fact that you can be lied to on almost anything but the sports page, and they can't get away with it there.
Well, that's an interesting point you bring up. I wrote the sports page back in the early 70s when I was on the writing staff of a TV show in Los Angeles called The Funny Side. I had to write a production number each week on a different subject, and that week I wrote, this is 1971, I guess, I wrote the song The Sports Page. It was sung on television by an actor named Warren Berlinger. And the point was that the sports page contained the only real facts, right? And everything else was, there was a spin on it. Now, isn't that ironic? Because today, I don't even sing the song anymore because it no longer applies. There's just as much hooey on the sports page, if not more, than there is any place else in the paper. I think the song has lost a lot of its bite because of what's happened to sports since it was written.
It's not about the scores anymore. It's about the agents and
egos. It's all about the deals. Have you noticed? It's not even about the results. It's of the, you know, and the point of the song was it was all about just the results, right?
But Rich also mentioned a song that a lot of people love, a song of excuses and phony lines called Blizzard of Lies. Can we just listen to that?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
We must have lunch real soon. Your luggage is checked through. We got inflation licked. I'll get right back to you. It's just a standard form, tomorrow without fail. Pleased to meet you, thanks a lot, your check is in the mail. Maroon, maroon, maroon in a blizzard of lies. Maroon, maroon, maroon in a blizzard of lies. Your toes and knees aren't all you'll freeze when you're in it up to your thighs. It looks like snow, but you never know when you're marooned in a blizzard of lies.
There again, I see a guy with adding to notes to the back of his envelope with these phony lines.
I see.
The check is in the mail. And
you know who I? You know what I see when I hear this song? I remember that cartoonist that they made. He had. Oh, no, I'm losing the guy's name, but they made a movie short about him in the Natural Man, you know, that guy that used to write for Mad Comics or something.
I'm blanking.
Anyway, I see him trudging through a big blizzard.
Not R. Crumb.
Yeah, Crumb. It looks like I always see an R. Crumb cartoon when I hear this.
1-800-423-8255, the Dave Frischberg connection. Rex is calling from Spokane, Washington.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Speak up, Rex. Thank you. That's a long way to call from Spokane.
Well, it's a bright spot in my day, this program.
Well, thank you, man.
I heard you talk about Peel Me a Grape, and I happen to have the Diana Krall recording of it, and I dug out the lyrics. And if you want to hear them, I'll read
them.
Yeah,
please.
As far
remind
as you
Dave.
Go, stop me when you've heard enough.
I've heard enough already.
No. Keep going. You say stomp me or stop me? Okay.
Okay, peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow, poach me a prawn, talk to me nice, you gotta wine me and dine me. Don't try to fool me, bejewel me, either amuse me or lose me. I'm getting hungry. Peel me a grape.
Well, thank you. I want to comment on that now. May I comment?
Sure.
In the first place, I wrote that song in 1962, that's like almost 40 years ago. I want to assure you that I write better than that now. I really do.
On.
I do.
Don't try to fool me, bejewel me.
Oh,
that's pretty good.
No, that's awful. That's all. Anyway, but all that aside. So you notice that line where it says poach me a prawn, talk to me nice. Well, the original line is called start me a smoke, talk to me nice. So when Diana Krall made the record of this about 2 years ago, I heard it for the first time, and she gets to that part and she sings, talk to me nice, talk to me nice. What? I couldn't believe it. Why is she doing that? So my publisher called up the producer of the record, and he said, why did Diana sing, not sing Start Me a Smoke, but sang the other line twice? Well, you know the way she feels about smoking. You know, she didn't want any reference to smoke. Well, you know, that convinced me. I said, oh, well, that makes sense. Okay, I wish they had called me. I could have thought of something better than to say, talk to me nice twice, but let it go, seeing that it's making all this money. And okay, so I met Diana Krall for the first time. And she said, gee, I'm sorry about that lyric. That's one of the first things she said to me. I said, well, why did you do that? I guess you just didn't want to talk about cigarettes. She says, oh, no, I'm a smoker. Let's go out and have a smoke right now. I said, well, why did you do it? She said, I just goofed, that's all.
So that's why
it's that way.
Rex, did you want to follow up?
I'm sorry. No, I'm just happy to have contributed to your show, and thank you very much.
Rex, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Now, Mr. Fishberg, what do you do for an encore? Do you still write these songs?
Yeah, I'm writing. I've had a flurry of writing with my partner, my sometimes partner, Bob Dorrell, and we've prepared a lot of special material that we do in our two-piano show. That's the show that we're opening tonight at the Regatta Bar in Boston.
What will you do, for example? What's the new stuff?
Well, we've got stuff that we do together. The title of our show is Who's On First, and that's an original piece of material. And then we do a couple of our own songs, a new one called The Saturday Dance, and another one, duets that we do together, special material. You'll hear what I mean.
Who's On First sounds like baseball again.
Yeah.
Where else do the new songs come from?
Well, for me lately, the impetus for writing has come from the theater. I've written two theatrical songs in the last year, then one for a review in New York that's currently playing, and then another one for a play that's about to open in Portland. It's a Christmas play. It's a Christmas song, actually. I'll probably sing that tonight. I'll be reading it because it's new to me, but that's my new Christmas song.
Do you want to give the Connection listeners a preview?
To my Christmas?
The Christmas song?
Well, no, I don't want to sing it, but I would say that the name of the song is The Difficult Season, and it addresses the darker, not grim, but the darker aspects of the Christmas season.
I'd like to just thank you enormously for all this work, all these songs we've enjoyed, and for me, especially Van Lingle Mungo, that's one of those things like April in Paris and the Bézier version and whatnot that could be substitute to national anthems if we ever have a chance to rewrite that sort of thing. But also, could we go out on your song, My Swan Song?
Well, yeah, I suppose we could. It's kind of a pessimistic way to end. It's about a guy with writer's block.
Yeah, but you did it. And there's a nice sort of silver lining in it. Dave Fishberg, thank you. And for Connection listeners anywhere near Boston this weekend, Dave Fishberg will be playing with Bob Dorrell at the Regatta Bar in the Charles Hotel in Cambridge tonight, Thursday, tomorrow, and Saturday. Thanks for help today from Rebecca Smuckler and Kim Bichari. The Connection is produced by Catherine Bidwell, Hitesh Hottie, John Holt, Amy McDonald and Keith Shield. Our senior producer is Mary McGrath. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection.
It's the work of a brain with a circuit and blown out fuses. While I'm trying in vain to invoke my used up muses. Now it's all that remains of my dried up creative juices. My call for a swan song. My swan song. Pop them out like waffles, the good ones and the awfuls, a new one every day. But now, I find I'm uninspired, my wig's no longer wired, I've nothing left to say. But I'll say it anyway. This is my new song. My long overdue song. It's the last flip-flop of a wobbling top that's spun down. It's the weak tweet tweet of a parakeet at sundown. It's the last tick-tock of a clock that's finally run down.
my dreary and drawn song. It's a weary and worn song. My been here and gone song. My swan song.
Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Coco Budakian and Sons, committed to educating consumers by offering advice on fine oriental rugs from around the world, appraisals, restoration, and cleaning.